Thank you. Yeah. If you can just see, because you'd like to see the screen, no? Oh, it's a small presentation which we'd like to
have. Sure.
Thanks, Rajiv.
Yeah, thanks for joining us today. I'll stop scrolling up. Yeah, so while some of you would be aware of Endurance, for some of you, I guess this would be the first time you are meeting us. We thought we'll take you very quickly through the presentation which we have uploaded on our investor webpage. And this will probably take 15 minutes to run through. You can jot down your questions at the end of the presentation. We will have time to take your questions. Are you able to see from there, or you may like to come? Yeah. Yeah. So very quickly, Endurance started in 1985 as an aluminium die-casting company for out of Aurangabad, where our first customer was Bajaj. Since then, we've become India's largest aluminium die-casting company. We have also diversified into three more product categories: suspension, transmission, and braking. And within aluminium die casting, also we've come a long way. We have we are heavily into machined aluminium castings. We have our own tool room, and we have a R&D center. In fact, we have four R&D centers for these four products. All of those are DSIR approved R&D centers. Apart from our operations in India, we have plants in Europe as well, in Italy and Germany. Today, we have 19 plants in India, 9 in Italy and Germany. We have like I said, we have a focus on R&D. We've got 22 patents and 18 design registrations, and we have more in the pipeline. We have more than 200 people focused on R&D. Yeah. If you look at the next chart, it says that the revenue, our revenue breakup is like this. So the right hand side, we say roughly, you're not able to see?
I'll open it.
Okay, yeah, it's there on the website. Yeah. So we have 75% of our revenues coming from India and 25% from our European operations. The European operation revenue is almost fully from machined castings. And this is for the four-wheeler industry. Now, our consolidated revenue, 29.8% is for the four-wheeler industry, out of which 25% is from Europe. So the remaining roughly 4% of the four-wheeler industry revenue comes from India. Our Indian operations are focused on the much larger two-wheeler market and also on the three-wheeler market. We have a very clean corporate structure, with Endurance Technologies, the listed company, being the only operating company in India as of now. In Germany, we have one subsidiary, which is an operating company. In Italy, we have an SPV, under which we have made multiple acquisitions over a period of time. Very soon, we would be acquiring 51% shares in Maxwell, which would be our Indian subsidiary. So this is where the four product categories, like I mentioned, aluminium castings, suspensions, brakes, and clutches. Which is transmissions. So this is where they sit in the vehicle. We also do various parts for three-wheelers and aluminium cast die casting parts for four-wheelers. These are parts from our European operations. So like I said, we are largely into machined castings in Europe. We also have a small plastics business. And 2 years ago, we had acquired Adler, which is a two-wheeler clutch manufacturing company. 19 plants in India, 9 plants in between Germany and Italy, 4 DSIR center approved R&D centers, and we are the only company, an auto ancillary company, which has a test track of this nature, which we'll be describing in one of our subsequent slides. We are an end-to-end service provider, because we not only design the proprietary products, which is suspensions, brakes, and clutches, we also develop the products, along with as per the requirements of the customer. We do our testing and validation, manufacturing, delivery, and finally aftermarket service, which is not only serving the OEM customer but also directly into the aftermarket. These are the financial numbers. Very broadly, I'd like to tell you that the two-wheeler industry, over a period of time, 10-year period, It has grown 1.4%. We have consistently beaten industry growth, which is why our revenue growth has been at a CAGR of 7.4%. We have more than 4,000 employees. We are net debt negative, and we have a strong credit rating as well. We are top two in each of our four product categories. We are the largest aluminium die casting company. We are also the largest two-wheeler, three-wheeler focused auto component manufacturer in India. Our focus on technology and R&D, where we have tied up with the best technology providers in all spaces, whether it is suspensions, where KTM is our technology partner. In clutches, Adler, which used to be our technology partner, is now our subsidiary. It's one of our Italian subsidiaries. Similarly, Grimeca, which is a brakes technology supplier, is today our subsidiary in Italy. For anti-lock braking system, ABS, our partner is BWI, which is a US-based company. And for forgings, we have tied up with a Europe-based company called FGM. Like I said, ours is the only company, an auto ancillary company, which has a test track of this nature. It's a 29-acre test track in Aurangabad, where we have multiple tracks, like that has been defined here, between T1 and T8. We have the high-speed track, the ride and evaluation track. For ABS, our ABS development story, a lot of credit goes to the test track here. This is the brakes testing surface, where it's a low friction surface with ability to test in dry and wet conditions. So the ABS was tested here, and also the country track here, because Indian roads often are not proper roads where the vehicle has to travel on. And we tested the ABS here as well. Yeah, other than that, we have testing. These are the gradients at different degrees of gradients to test vehicles on the slope. The T2 is where we test our suspensions, because there are different kinds of bumpers and uneven roads here. Yeah, this, like I told you, in Italy, we have acquired multiple companies over a period of time. And this is the timeline which gives you the story of our growth of business through acquisitions in Italy. Apart from acquisitions, we have, of course, done a lot of brownfield projects on in our plants. It's not scrolling. Yeah, we have a strong focus on the aftermarket business, which used to be roughly 3%, 4% of our consolidated turnover. It has now gone up to 5.5%, and we continue to focus on growth here. This is one of our most profitable segments. We established the aftermarket in 2001. Today, we export to 31 countries and plan to add another 3 countries in this year. We have 501 distributors in India and 42 distributors overseas. We have 69 employees working on the marketing team of aftermarkets. The subsequent slides, it speaks about our focus on people and our focus on our core values, our focus on safety, not only for ourselves, but also for contractor workmen working on our premises, and our focus on ESG. The awards that we won, and these updates I'm sure you would have heard on our con call, and we'll also address questions about these what's happening in our industry. So happy to take your questions, sir.
Is there something, some improvement there in terms of margins happening in the auto business?
So our European industry margins before we saw the spike in fuel costs were at between 18 and 19%. So this was, I mean, for auto ancillaries based out of India and operating in Europe, this was probably the best margin scenario that you would have seen. The gas and electricity prices that have gone up even before the Ukraine crisis and subsequently, that has, I mean, it is unprecedented to see prices go up 400, 500% in a year. This is unprecedented. Our sales contracts did not have pass-through clauses for energy, unlike for aluminium, where we have sales price pass-through. For energy, we don't have such pass-through. But what we are seeing is that since this is the prices have been at a high level on a sustained basis. Yeah, we are in touch with our customers, and with one customer, we've had headway in terms of getting some price increases, but not yet with other customers. But the conversations are still ongoing because if the prices stay at such high levels, the customers will have, will effectively, ultimately, will have no choice but to pass on the prices. Because Endurance being net debt negative and some of the other casting companies who are strong, they will be able to sustain with these higher energy prices for a long period of time. Even today, with high energy prices, we are making 12 to 13% EBITDA margins. But there are weaker companies, and the customers would not want their supply chain to be contracted. So they will they have two choices. One is to give the price increases and therefore not allow the supply chain to get contracted, or to remain at without giving the prices, which would mean the industry itself would sh the our competitors would be lesser.
And what is the lag with which we pass on the aluminum price increases?
For different customers, it's different lags. It could vary between 1 to 4 months.
It's not an immediate pass.
No, it's not an immediate pass-through, because what happens is the OEMs also settle with the, because they also buy a lot of aluminium, or they settle it for the tier ones, and then they say, okay, this is what we have settled around with steel industries and aluminium industries. So it's only a process of 1 quarter lag, and but you are still, compensated for the entire amount.
And we try to do the same with our suppliers as well. So we try to keep similar lags with suppliers also.
In terms of the end markets in the European business, how are you seeing the demand for four-wheelers than what you're facing?
So yeah, the volumes have been low, both from the so initially with COVID and all on the demand side, and on the due to the fact that the dealerships were closed, and subsequently there was the chip shortage, and now the Ukraine crisis, which has led to supply chain issues on things like wiring harnesses and all. So on the production side also. So yeah, volumes continue to be low. The OEMs, they are focusing a lot on making sure that the volumes are available for high-end vehicles. So that part of the industry is doing fine, but the mass market is not doing well.
See, Ukraine event is only in almost 2.5 months now. So all the OEMs, because they know that this is a serious or a major disruption with large dependence on Russia, large dependence on Ukraine for certain. So recalibration will take a certain amount of time. It may take 2 months, 3 months, or 4 months, but at the end of the day, water will find its balance and they will come back to normal production, depending on the consumption patterns also.
So in Europe, today only there was a news that Europe may be banning all combustion, internal combustion vehicles by 2035. So does that have impact on your business?
Yes, so that was their plan to move to an entirely electric future by 2035. We'll have to see whether that plan actually goes in that direction, because the industry there has been facing so much of challenge. I'm sure the government will be considerate and may want to move this plan forward. But yeah, that's their long-term goal. Yeah, as far as our strategy goes, for the last more than 5 years now, we have been seeing this happening, that there will be a transition to electric and hybrid cars. We have had a strong focus on getting orders in this space, And we've been successful also. Today we have more, we have 150 million euros worth of annual orders peaking in FY27 from the electric and hybrid space, of which 55 million is in electric and 95 million is in hybrid space. So these numbers we must see in the context of the fact that last year our turnover was 220 million. So out of last year's turnover of 220 million in earlier years, which were better years for the industry, we've gone up to 240 to 250 million. So if that is the base turnover for our European operations, and out of that, we have 150 million worth of orders in the EV and battery and hybrid space, I think we are in a pretty strong position going forward also.
So 150 million per annum, which will peak in
FY27.
So basically, this will hypothetically that scenario were to happen where you know, keep having a decline in ISAT. Your turnover or your addressable market will remain kind of same. So your turnover from ICE will be replaced by your orders in the EV space.
Yes. Because some of the models will automatically get phased out, which would mean our existing turnover will get impacted, but then this new turnover will take.
This has come mainly from acquisitions, or you have developed capabilities
No, so our acquisitions in the casting and machining space, we've not done any new acquisition in the last 3 years. So 3 years ago, we had done an acquisition, but that did not bring in new capabilities to us. Our capabilities were already there. We have a technical center in Turin where we have casting experts. And similarly, in India, we have a casting R&D center.
And typical margins in this EV hybrid space is how much? Would that also be depressing margins, right?
So in one of our earlier calls, we have said that margins are going to be slightly lower as compared to ICE vehicles. The main reason for this is that the customer realizes that unlike ICE vehicles, where the life of each model was curtailed because of the industry moving from Euro 2, Euro 3, Euro 4 and so on, and therefore the engine parameters were changing. But in ICE, they recognize that the same vehicle is or the same model is going to last for a much longer period of time, of 8 to 10 years. So whatever costs, ancillaries like us had to spend on stabilization of a process and things like that for a new part, we don't have to spend those costs. That has been factored in by the customer in determining the pricing, and that has depressed the margin a little bit. But then on a return basis, since we'll be using the same tools and the same shapes of dies for a prolonged period of time, we'll be at the current levels.
And sir, with your experience now of you know this global business, whatever, obviously there are so many. The last 3-4 years have been pretty bad. But even if you kind of remove that, what are the global ambitions and how do you see your opportunity? Because I don't think it has you know kind of it's been a mixed.
So we've made not very large acquisitions, but small acquisitions fairly consistently in Europe. Yeah, in India, our growth has been largely on an organic basis. In India, of course, we see the market or the or ability of Endurance to grow as much larger than what we see in other parts of the world. We are on the lookout for opportunities both in India and in Europe and elsewhere, but Europe and India are our natural fit. So we
in
are
Europe,
looking.
Not many companies, I mean, across all businesses have been successful. What is the lucrativeness of, say, a Europe geography for us?
Well, I mean, the premium car manufacturers are there, big names are there in Germany, Italy, France. And we are already deeply entrenched with all of those car manufacturers. We work very closely with them right from the development stage of the vehicle. And we have a profitable business. So all things are good for us. I mean, the general market perception may be different. But as far as Endurance Europe is concerned, we are in a good space.
But do we supply to Stellantis in Europe?
Yes.
Again, like over the last couple of months, they have mentioned that they plan to make India as an export hub. So,
do we plan to maybe leverage this partnership and not just for Stellantis or for other OEMs also on the European side, and maybe grow the aluminum castings business here in India?
Yes, that in fact, if you look into the business model of the acquisitions that we did in 2006, the primary objective of the acquisitions was this only, that all the OEMs which are sitting over there, Volkswagen and others, that when they come to India, we are able to leverage those relationships, do the castings over there, bring that technology over here and do those same kind of, you know, service levels from India also. Today, if you look into what has happened in Europe, we are probably the only ones who have grown business over there. You know, adding multiple customers, adding, you know, acquiring new businesses and all. And our business model had a very special feature. You know, we not only acquired orders, but we didn't spend so much of capex onto it. We outsourced capacities, which today has given us a clear advantage that when the volumes are lower, then we don't use those capacities, we can use in-house capacities.
Right.
So it was a clear strategic business model that we made, that in spite of acquiring new orders, we don't lose out on business, we keep on growing. And in case there's any, you know, financial crisis like, you know, 2008 Lehman Brothers or whatever, we don't face that challenge again. Because 2008, after 2006, you know, where we acquired all these businesses, we had a serious problem of the financial crisis. You know, the entire Europe was down by 40% now. So on one hand, you made acquisitions, on the other hand, you've lost 40% of market. And, you know, so that was a clear learning for us, a very clear learning. So from there, we redefined, recalibrated our strategies. And today, the position in which we are, I find that our business model is absolutely perfect. You know, in spite of events like Ukraine happening, yeah, we're still at 270 million euros of business.
No, but then we haven't been able to make inroads with these OEMs as far as the Indian markets are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a substantial time since the acquisition. And whatever 4% revenue for the four-wheeler is coming, it's largely coming from the Korean
mm-hmm.
right now. So any thought on, like, by when can we see, if at all...
So when you talk about Koreans, we have acquired very large orders from Kia and Hyundai.
Correct.
In the recent times.
Yeah.
We've added one facility in Chennai.
Right.
From existing Chennai, we've gone to Vallam, which is just about 20 kilometers from the existing unit.
Yes.
We've acquired businesses worth 100 close plus, you know, with Hyundai and Kia, and which is all maturing out. You know, we can see that the numbers are falling in place. And I think Chennai is doing extremely well on these numbers. And now that brings us into a larger space of four-wheeler application, four-wheeler die casting. Earlier, we were with Tata Motors and Mahindra, but today we've got Tata Motors, Mahindra, we've got, you know, Hyundai, Kia.
And like you mentioned about what happened, I mean, why we are not there with, say, Volkswagen India or Fiat India, we don't see the volumes for any particular model
yeah.
being there on a sustained basis.
No, so that's why I was talking from Stellantis' perspective, India becoming an exporter.
Yeah, I mean, for them, it would be only natural to come to somebody like us who
yeah.
has already kind of demonstrated our capabilities in Europe
mm-hmm.
and we would be, I mean, our casting facilities in India are extremely capable,
mm-hmm.
but if there's any new learning to be taken from the European operations, that advantage also we have.
In fact, apart from that, you can see that the business which we are casting and machining over there, we've got similar businesses over here. It's not that what we've got in Europe, we've got to re-establish in India.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We are already into the space of casting, aluminium die casting and machining.
Right.
So, when OEMs over there, they start, you know, they think of any vendors in India, I think Endurance is one of the obvious names.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about the two-wheeler, what is the demand of the kind in terms of content per vehicle? So, are you increasing it or?
So, our in the country, the peak production was in FY19
yeah.
with 2.5 crore vehicles being sold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's down to 1.8 crore vehicles. So, there's a big gap of 0.6 crore vehicles. Yeah, that's something we believe that it's because of initially the higher cost of ownership with insurance and ABS mandates and all that. But consumers, they get used to a certain level of higher costs over a period of time. Then it got impacted with COVID, and to an extent, the production of high-end motorcycles has also got impacted due to non-availability of chips. So all these factors, we believe, are temporary. the India growth story, the growth in the road infrastructure, the growth in the aspirational middle class, all that is still there. And it's only natural that people would buy more two-wheelers. So 2.5 crore vehicles is a base that we've already seen that should be coming back very soon, maybe in a year or two. And it could also go up to 3 crore vehicles in maybe 3 or 4 years. That's the volume outlook.
So based on the production plans which have been shared with you by the OEMs, are you seeing some improvement in volumes this year onwards?
Yes, we are. We are.
But I mean, anywhere close to FY19 volumes, or is it?
FY19 was peak. Yeah, that is as you said, 24.42 million vehicles. Bridging a gap of 7 million vehicles, we are at 17.9 today. Bridging a gap of 7.9 million vehicles in 1 year, at least I can't see that happening in 1 year.
See, the capacities are there in the country. The demand has to be there.
In terms of catering to various OEMs, so we will be well entrenched with Bajaj for sure. How are we for the various segments which we are? With the other OEMs like Hero, Honda, TVS, and maybe Royal Enfield.
Okay, so Bajaj, you know that we've got a service level of almost 35 years. Yeah. You know, so it is a matured relationship. We started our journey with other customers maybe 20 years back, in phases 10 years back, in phases maybe 5 years back, and in phases very recently with TVS.
Right.
So we had plenty of space to move forward. Plenty of space. So in Bajaj, all our product verticals are there. In Royal Enfield, all our product verticals are there. But with other customers, we have acquired businesses like in case of Hero, we are there for suspension. We're there for suspension. And that too, we have got, you know, 100% SOB for their Halol project. Now, I still see space for clutches, which they're already approved as far as the testing and all is concerned. I see space over there. I see that space on CVT, which is also tested and approved. So there are clear, headrooms ahead where we can make ingress. As far as Honda is concerned, we are already servicing them castings. We are supplying them suspension. We are supplying them brakes. So we are already there. So making it in TVS, we've recently, we've started brakes business with them. We've got alloy wheel business with them. So the up move towards or the ingress that we can make with other OEMs is still large. And we've got plenty of work to do over there. Our intensity of engagement is very strong with these OEMs. And in coming years, you can see that all this space which is available, we will be inching towards capturing all those businesses.
So for Honda, just specifically, what would be a wallet share for the segments which you are catering to? Or share of business?
It's different in product verticals. In castings, we are 30 to 50%. Right, in suspension, we are close to, let's say, in one of the cases, we've got 70% and so on. So we enjoy very strong share of businesses with them on the product vertical
side. Just to add on to that, over the years, obviously, your two-wheeler wallet share has increased. And if you would see, obviously, your margins have also increased and improved because of the newer products which you've launched. What's the scope more for your two-wheeler wallet that in the next, say in the next 3 years or 5 years, that you're really looking forward to increase further from here, and what are the newer products which you're already planning to bring in that could ideally add on to more margins despite the challenges which are there right now, which we all understand, and say things in the next 1-2 years do stabilize and improve, how would that share really move up or increase further from?
Okay. First of all, we must understand that we've got space ahead of us with other customers, right? We've got in transmission, braking, suspension. So if at all today, I'm with TVS on brakes and alloy wheels, I still have got headroom for suspension and clutches and other things. Likewise for Honda, if I've got a share of business of, let's say, 70% on a product, I can still move upwards. If I've got some 30% on one product, I still have got moving upwards. So our business model or our business strategy is clearly defined toward that group. But what are we adding further for our growth factors? We're moving into high-end products. High-end products like 200cc and above vehicles where premiumization is something that we're looking forward for. And we have already embarked on that journey maybe 10 years back. if you look into the inverted front forks. Today, I think we are the only ones in the country who not only supply close to 20,000 or total requirements of 20,000 inverted front forks a month, but we are probably the only ones who are mass productionized for large scale like this. So we've got a clear edge over there. So this is a journey that we embarked 10 years back, and today probably we are sitting at a position where we are dominant players, absolute dominant players. There's hardly any competition for me in that. And we have not only done that, we've understood the road conditions, we've understood the road conditions, the driving habits and other things, which not only we have improved and improvised on the product configurations, we have improved on performance, durability, reliability, all these things we have worked on as far as design side and product side is concerned.
And model-wise, when we look at wallet share, and since we are there very deeply entrenched with Bajaj in all the four products and very deeply entrenched with Royal Enfield on all the four products, so when it's Royal Enfield or Bajaj, then roughly we our supplies to them is between 12% and 16% of their ex-factory price. Yeah, we've done this study on a model-by-model basis. Yeah, while if we look at the same ratio for HMSI or for Hero, then for most models, it would be between 7% and 8% because we are deeply entrenched into castings and suspensions. And we have made headway, but we are not deeply entrenched yet into clutches and brakes. So that's where there's headroom. In TVS also, we now the orders that we have already won from TVS, we've got very large brakes and suspensions orders. Going forward, we'll be getting more such orders and also clutches. Possibly castings also, you have to see, because they have their own castings company.
So what kind of products do we supply to EV two-wheelers?
So all the three products, clutches are not required in an EV two-wheeler. So we supply brakes, suspensions and castings.
Because what I understand is our competitors are getting very aggressive there, especially on the shock absorbers side. So do you also see
Let me not look into my competition. Let us view EV space as every vendor, for that matter, tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, any vendor would like to be in that space. So competition is getting aggressive or endurance is getting aggressive. Or that's a very natural phenomenon to happen. No? If we are all talking about electrification, that means we are all talking about a new segment of vehicles coming in. And nobody would want to miss that space. Who will succeed in that? Persons who give in QCDDMM, you know, that is what a person should have with its basic strength. Today, if I'm offering solutions, complete solutions to the customers, which would mean not only design, develop, validate, you know, deliver, manufacture, service, it's a complete solution that we are providing to our customer. That means we are offering them a service which puts them into least of botheration as far as warranties are concerned, EFRs are, early failures are concerned. We are giving them a product which is dependable, durable, and it's a proven product. So the kind of testings that we have, the kind of test tracks that we are the only ones who's got a test track, so we can test the vehicle on our products on the vehicle directly and have a feel of what is it. So that's where we have got the edge. So I'm not surprised that my competition is also trying to find space in EVs. I'm not surprised with that. It will only come out that who will become the winner. So winner, since this is a new segment for the OEMs also, it's a new space, it's a new vehicle configuration which is going to be on the road. So proven products will be on the road. This is what I strongly believe.
Sure. So can you very broadly share what are our share in those electric OEMs?
It's difficult to place a number right now because the space itself is evolving.
Right. I know it's a small base, but...
space itself is evolving. If all the OEMs have got to get over there, what will be the transition? How many of ICE vehicles will get replaced with EV vehicles is anybody's guess right now. Because we don't have an upper cap, no?
No. Within EVs, what we are share versus competition is what I'm trying to
say. It doesn't make sense to see that number, to be honest.
It doesn't make sense because the vehicles have, the total electrification has just started. It's just begun. I think 276,000 vehicles have been made. Last year, how much was that number?
I think 400,000, including four-wheelers and three-wheelers. Mm-hmm.
4%.
Yeah, I had that number.
429,000 EVs, which included 231,000 two-wheelers.
So yes, you're right. 231,000 vehicles as compared to 17.9 million vehicles is no comparison at all.
Right.
So it's the electrification space which is evolving. It is the vehicles. It is the manufacturers are evolving. Right now there are 40 players into that. Everybody wants to be an EV, and that too OEM manufacturing, vehicle manufacturing. So placing a number against that is anybody's guess. Let me put it very frankly.
Sir, just rephrasing the question in a different way. What are the products? And since you said there are 40 people that are there, for you also to spend your energies and, will the first mover advantage that, being with the OEM, because everybody who is developing would have their vendors in place. So, will there be like an early mover advantage, or you want to see how pricing evolves or product evolves? How are you approaching the development of the products and your capital and time allocation to the EV part of the business? Because volumes, obviously, see, as a part of incremental business, it is going up, and it is anybody's guess whether it will be a substantial portion by 25 or 30 or what we don't know. But from your capital and time allocation point of view, and what kind of customer wins have you kind of achieved?
Okay. To answer your question, the first answer is within yourself, your own words. You said it is evolving, so it's a space which is evolving. So obviously the intensification of engagement with all customers is there. Okay. We have acquired orders from Ather, we have acquired orders from Hero, and so on. So we are getting into prime business wins also, and Bajaj, we are already there on the, now the products that we hold are all EV agnostic, right? For any vehicle which moves on wheels, you need a brake. For any vehicle which moves on wheels, you need a wheel itself. So we are into alloy wheels. So we've got our products which are an integral part of a vehicle, except for the clutch. Now, clutch, I'm not really worried, because the first thing which is going to probably get disrupted, as per the industry pundits, that will be the scooter space. Motorcycle is, it's right now nobody's thinking about motorcycles getting disrupted or something. So my larger share of business is in motorcycles. Mm-hmm. Scooters, I think we are representing only 6-7%.
Yeah.
And that too, 6-7% in casting. So casting gets replaced by the EV castings that I will get. Okay. Clutch is hardly there. The only thing, there's no clutch in scooters. There's a CVT. CVT, my business is hardly anything except for the recent product qualifications I have with one of the customers. So my product on CVT doesn't get disrupted.
Yeah,
okay, so it's only addition. So casting I get from my customers, I get castings where I'm already there. Brakes is no issues at all, and suspension is no issue at all. So, and alloy wheels, of course. So we are already into that space where all our products can fit into the electrical vehicle. And as far as acquisition is concerned, yes, we are acquiring new businesses.
Okay, so you are with everybody who is, so Ola, Ather seems to be obviously ahead of the game. In terms of even say last month numbers that we see, there seems to have.
So the orders that we have already disclosed in public domain is that for Bajaj, both in two wheelers and three wheelers, we have orders. For Polarity, which is an e-bike company, we have orders. And for Hero Electric, we have the alloy wheel orders. Yeah, and the brakes for
Ather.
Yeah. So these are the orders in hand. The out of the say 40 odd manufacturers, we know that or we believe that the traditional OEMs will go into the EV space and will gain some kind of success. So we are focused on their plans and we work with them. Among the new age OEMs which are exclusively into EVs, we have a way of evaluating which are the ones which are likely to succeed. We focus on the larger ones which are likely to succeed.
Right. So,
that's how we spend our marketing time or our research efforts.
So, and dies, etc., that we will have to create, obviously, till the volumes pick up to a certain level, they will not be. So, in terms of the capital allocation,
see, some of the smaller guys in the new age EVs, so correct me if I'm wrong, I believe they would not even be designing their suspension and brakes specifically. They'll be buying off the shelves because their volumes are so less.
Hmm.
The
hmm.
ones who really have bigger plans, they will be working with strong players like us to develop specific characteristics in their suspensions and brakes, which will be model specific.
So, but between the two brothers, is there any bifurcation of
for the components related to EVs that one would be restricted to so-and-so products? And
there's no formal understanding like that. The informal understanding is that the traditional products,
yeah.
we don't get into each other's lines of business.
Because the opportunity size on the EV related components purely, so that seems to be quite larger than the traditional products which we are doing.
No, the traditional products will continue.
No, traditional will continue. We don't talk about that. But say when we talk about the DC-DC converters or the traction motors or the BMS which we are getting into, so that as a percentage of, as you mentioned, the ex-factory price would be much larger than what we are presently catering to the traditional.
So what's your question?
I just wanted to know. So there is no formal.
There's no formal. No.
Yeah, that's all right.
So on this brake suspension casting in an EV and in an IC engine, is there any value addition or it's like the same things going on?
What's the question?
The brake in an ICE versus a brake in an EV is one of them more value added than the other?
Yeah, so it depends on the configuration of the vehicle. You know, high-end bikes like a Pulsars or a KTMs and all, they've got different configurations of the vehicles because they can be higher disc diameter, they can be higher caliper, or the requirements are different. But for EVs of what we are having currently, the disc diameters are smaller, the brake size is smaller. So that's the only difference. But as far as performance part of it, that's not different. What a hydraulic brake system is supposed to do on a small two-wheeler, it's supposed to do the same thing on a large high-end bike. Only thing that the vehicle the product configuration will be different.
So we have to design it according to the weight of the vehicle, the structure of the vehicle, the speed that the vehicle can take.
So for Bajaj, two-wheelers and three-wheelers electric, all the three products would be supplied. Brake suspension.
Clutches. Yes, yes. Not clutches, casters.
Sorry, casters.
Yeah.
So ideally, the two segments, that is castings and suspension, which form the biggest chunk of your portfolio, what growth numbers are now we looking at or working with around for the next couple of years?
We will not share numbers, but what we can say is that so our growth is based on a few drivers.
Right.
So one is the industry growth. We know that the industry is at a low now and it should grow from here. Second is our ability to penetrate new customers and to supply all four product categories to our customers. So like we said, we are already there in Bajaj and RE in all four categories in a big way. We have space which we need to cover for Hero, HMSI, and TVS.
So, let me put my question in this way. The long-term CAGR growth has been in the range of around, say, 6.5-7%. Are we looking at that number to continue growing, or will that be at a faster pace once things really do stabilize?
You're asking of our internal growth plans? I don't think we should be sharing that. No. But the growth drivers, if you like, I can come back to that. So there's serving all customers in all four product categories, going for value addition. So in each of the products, for instance, in castings, we are doing more and more machining. We are doing four-wheeler castings. That's an area of growth and more value addition there. Of course, EV-related new casting shapes and the stricter, or you can say stronger technical requirements or new technical requirements in EV castings, all that we are trying to take care of. In clutches, we have acquired Adler. So that brings to us new technology basis, which in the 200cc plus clutch market will be a more prominent force than what we are right now. And in clutches, we have a paper-based clutch line. The traditional product was a cork-based clutches. Now the paper-based clutches are growing, so that's more value-added. In brakes, you know about our ABS. You know about the fact that we acquired Grimeca 2 years ago, and that brings to us some technology, a strong brand for the higher-end bikes. Brakes, suspensions. Suspensions, of course, we are the only ones doing inverted front forks.
Yeah.
We do inverted front forks for KTM, both for India and overseas, and for Bajaj and HMSI models. Going forward, we also want to supply inverted front forks to 1190cc bikes of KTM. So that's on our technology map
and how value big, addition. How big map. Is that market?
It's a niche market.
It's a niche market. So we can't put a number to that because, see, 1190cc and all, very limited number of people would have it. It's the bikers who have it, you know, and more into exports or more into larger markets of, you know, Europe and other places.
Yeah. So that's on the value addition side. That's another leg on our growth strategy. Then aftermarket, which is a very prominent, which is a very profitable segment, both our own products as well as traded products. That's a part of our growth strategy. Newer products coming in through three different routes. One is M&A, like we did for Maxwell, and therefore we'll be going into BMS. One is where we develop our own technology. So we hire experts, bring them on board as employees and get them to develop products like we've done in the case of Driveshaft, and technology absorption like we've done in the case of ABS, where we absorb technology from BWI.
Just one question on casting. You have talked about this in past, but like casting content, what it is in the ICE vehicle compared to what it will be in EV, I think it's going to be same as
the yeah. number of castings would be more.
Yeah.
In
but the content per vehicle will remain the same.
Almost.
And what kind of the value addition will be there? Because I believe the ICE casting would be more complex compared to what you're going to supply to an EV two-wheeler.
No. Complexity, there are some parts in EVs also which are very complex casting, you know, because very high scale of machining is required, very high accuracy. See, like a battery box, you know, you can't have misalignments over there, and also very high scale of machining is required. Some parts, of course, are simpler because they're, you know, peripheral parts of the whole system. But yes, you're right. IC engines is also very, very complex, you know, having central bores made into the main crankcase and a crankcase is very high technology and very high precision machining.
So where are we on the machining mix for the casting business?
Pardon me?
Machining mix, how much would that be like fully machined product as compared to say raw product or just the casted product which is being supplied to OEM?
We are not supplying any as cast products on EVs. We are doing fully machined.
No, for the traditional.
For traditional also today, total machine, I fully machined
70 to 75%.
Yes.
And for the 6 months in FY22, since we started the ABS, what was the volume production volume for us for ABS?
Around, we must have up till now produced around 1 lakh modulators.
So this we plan to take it to 4 lakh by
per annum by September. Yeah.
And just one thing on like on the European business, again, since you have won the order, hybrid, on the EV side we have the orders, but again the same thing, like what is the content which you are going to supply in a PV and what will be the like value add? Is there any value? Same question which I asked for the two wheelers. So same thing for the passenger vehicle. So what is there a difference in the content or is there a difference in value addition on the PV side in European business?
Sorry, if you could rephrase your question.
So I'm saying like you supply, currently you're supplying to the ICE two wheelers, but as industry, that industry, European industry is moving faster to the EVs.
Yes.
So, but you have the orders in your order book.
Yeah.
But what will be the value addition in the hybrid? Means the component which you are supplying to the hybrid four-wheelers.
Okay, so there is a fair bit of complexity in the parts that we will be supplying to for the transmissions in EVs in four-wheelers in Europe. So it's high value-added products.
Okay.
Yeah. So and of course, in hybrid, the engine parts will also be there.
Hybrids, obviously.
Yeah. Engine parts
will be there. So the content will be much higher.
And in battery EVs also, because of light weighting, there will be more structural parts also.
So could you explain once again why your EBITDA margins for the EVs would be lower than the ICE?
So that's relevant for our European business, where we have said that in EVs, our EBITDA margins will be lower. That's because the EV model life is going to be longer, which means in ICE models, as the Euro norms were changing from Euro 3, 4, 5 and so on, the engine parameters were changing and we had to kind of get orders for newer parts and then stabilize the production of such newer parts. In EVs, the life of each model is expected to be much longer, at say 10 years or so. So if we have that, then we also have the advantage of not having those stabilization and marketing costs related to the product. And I think we've run out of time. So last question
on Maxwell acquisition. So I believe you have shared the order book number, what Maxwell
150 has, crore.
150 yeah. crores. But if you can share, like, what, again, I don't know if you can share, but what's the, like, content of a BMS? Means the kind of the component they supply, what's the kind of content is there for two-wheeler?
I think we mentioned that's roughly 5%.
5 to 7% is what we believe that would be the content of a BMS on an electric vehicle.
Okay, so 100,000 maybe a scooter, so 5,000 is the BMS content.
We 5% is 5%, what we know.
5% is what we know. We don't know. Yeah, we have 100,000 a year. We say okay. BMS would be around 5%.
5% of the.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Everyone. Thank you. I'll just go down for 2 minutes.
Yes. I have run out of cards. So if you can give me your card, I'll surely drop you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you. I have run out of cards. I'll drop you an email. Thank you. We were not meeting people beach May, and I didn't look at my stock of cards. Thank you. Thank you.
Sorry, we haven't met. I'm Deepak from Fidelity.
Hello, Deepak. I'm Raj. I had the investor relations at Angel. All
right. Yeah, again, same thing. We haven't met. I started covering 2.5 years back, but we keep it back.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks
for your time.
So you need the chat.
Yes, I do.
हाँ बोलो अच्छा ठीक है उसको दे दी थी ना अच्छा और बोल दी थी ना कि 1.5 घंटा काम नहीं है, ठीक है। अब मैं तो इधर ही रहूंगा बट तुम लोग दूर तो मत जाओ, इरला जाना है तो इरला जाकर आ जाओ। कितनी बजे? हाँ मुझे तो 6 बजे चाहिए। हाँ